Hello everyone, you're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
Hi, I'm Angela Peabody of Global Woman Peace Foundation, and I listen to America's Meditating Radio Show.
Do you like to meditate? Have you tried to meditate? Have you struggled with meditation? Why don't you visit one of the Brahma Kumaris Meditation Center? Visit brahmakumaris.org. I rise above. I'm the master of my own mind. I sit here with a pure intention to gain mastery over my thoughts and therefore mastery over my words and actions. As I hear the thoughts through words of others, I ask myself, is that my truth? My original nature is one of love, peace, purity, truth, and joy. And sometimes when I hear the words that do not match my original nature, I have the choice to rise above and remember who I really am. As a master of my mind, I decide which thoughts stay and which thoughts must go. I choose to rise above. As I rise above in consciousness and interpretations of stories, narratives that no longer support my truth or present, greater power, greater peace, and acceptance for myself and others surrounds me in this moment. As a master of my mind, I rise above, replacing thoughts of fear, anger, greed, and divide. Thoughts of belonging, respect, love, and wisdom. As I rise above, I find clarity, a deeper meaning, and the courage to continue to move on. I rise above, and I remember who I am and why I'm here, and that is to love everyone the same. Let me sit in this state of being above. Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was I Rise on Inclusion Revolution Together with Love, produced with a hip-hop artist, and some of my thoughts and words. It was quite a different experience, but I wanted to be a part of the Inclusion Revolution because that's just the way that I've lived my life for almost 60 years. We appreciate that you can join us on America Meditating, and I feel humbled to be your host and to just be a part of the conversation with you. I hope today finds you in a good spirit. I wish I could say that for myself. It's been quite an interesting period for me, everyone. It's been very, very interesting. I won't even call it challenging. It's just been very interesting. And I don't know how many of you that are listening on air actually might be enduring where somebody very close to you could be your mother, which in my case, it's my mother. But on top of it being my mother, she's also an instrument, which is somebody on the field of service with me too for over 30-something years. So we've been like a partnership for so long. And I don't know, but for the past year or two, I don't know if she's emotionally or mentally declining in her remembrance, or if it's just that I'm not accepting it because I see her so normal, or is it that my expectations of her are so much higher, or is it that I just haven't learned anything of all of my decades of spiritual study? I have no idea. It's just a constant back and forth, and I'm in between feeling like, gosh, you know, it would have been so good if I was so powerful that it could just impact her. Or it could be that, come on, you know how to do this. I expect more from you. And it's interesting if you've ever been in between those two places, like I could be more powerful to help, or, you know, I expect better from you. And I'm just observing this energy that consistently tries to, I don't know, it's calling something more for me to either show up with more love or to make a decision to just get out of it or to allow myself to sink into it and become part of it. It's just been a very, very interesting experience for me of late. And even the whole staff, the whole family has been kind of wondering how to handle it and what to do with it. Because on one side, there's just a tremendous amount of divinity and beauty and grace, and so you don't want to deny that. And then on the other side is this small percentage of we have no idea what it is, vibration. And we're like, okay, what next? You know, how do we go? How do we handle this? But anyway, it gives me great comfort to know that our next guest is none other than Ganga Ji. Ganga Ji shares a very simple message. Her message is, this is an invitation to shift your allegiance from the activities of your mind to the eternal presence of your being. Born in Texas, Ganga Ji grew up in Mississippi and later moved to San Francisco, where she began exploring deeper levels of her own inner being. She took Bodhisattva vows, practiced Zen and Vipassana meditation. She helped run a Tibetan Buddhist meditation center and had a career as an acupuncturist in the San Francisco Bay Area for some time. But despite her successes, Ganga Ji continued to experience a deep and persistent longing for fulfillment. And in the wake of her disillusionment, she made a final prayer for true help. And in 1990, the answer to her prayer came unexpectedly, taking her to India and to the meeting that would change everything for the rest of her life. Today, Ganga Ji travels the world speaking to seekers from all walks of life, a teacher, author. She shares her direct experience of the essential message she received and offers it to all who want to discover a true and lasting fulfillment. Ganga Ji, welcome. Om Shanti. So glad that you could join us today.
Thank you. Thank you
for
your welcome.
You hear me ranting off this morning?
No, I could really appreciate that. It's so human, and we all need to remember that we're all human. I appreciated your sharing so deeply.
It's been so interesting. Even just before getting into the studio, you had no idea what I had to do to just get away. And it was just so interesting that there's somebody with so much beauty and there's so much love, and you can't get into their world because for you it makes no sense, and that's not where you belong. You know, and it's just like, oh, how do I separate that? How do I help that? It's quite an interesting experience.
So humbling just to be in that deep love and to also see where we have no control. There's something else that is bigger than what we want, actually. And that stops us.
Yeah, yeah, it can. And it's interesting because I find myself going back and forth where I don't want the ego that slips in the journey of spirituality to come in, where even I expect myself to be more powerful, that I should impact change for the ones that are closest to me, because I'm very well aware that attachment reduces that force. And, you know, it doesn't matter what you think that you're non-attached, when you spend a lot of time with the same people, you know, automatically, subtly, that energy is fed. So it's been quite a journey. But let me talk about yours. Your background is so interesting. I understand that you pursued many paths to change your life, including relationships, motherhood, political activism. Thank God you did that. Career and spiritual practice. But even the greatest of your successes, still there is that, you know, that void that comes up, or that part of us that says, well, there's more. Tell us a little bit about you, Gangaji, so that our audience can get acclimated.
Well, I realized with all my good fortune that I was still suffering underneath it. I had had profound experiences of perfection and beauty and light and devotion and mystery. But I would my attention would return to personal suffering. And I worked on that. I did different things for that to try to process that and address it directly, and also I found great benefit from everything. But I felt I was missing some essential tool. That's the way I was holding it in that time. And I needed help. I had never really looked for a teacher before. I considered myself very independent, and I didn't need a teacher, and I had been in different traditions where there were gurus and there were teachers, but I had followed the tradition without incorporating the guru relationship. So I wasn't really looking for that, but I did know I needed something. And I prayed, you know, I prayed to the universe, a prayer of help. And in a certain sense, it seemed indulgent because I did have so much. I had come so far from when I first began seeking some form of happiness in lots of wrong ways. But still, I was doing all right. But I think we all know when there is some gap or there's something missing. Mm-hmm. And I knew that, and I just prayed. I need a teacher. I thought in my mind that it would be like a mountain or a goddess or something abstract, a little safer than a real-life person. But it was a guru in India, and Papaji Sri H.W.L. Punja. And I went to him, and I saw him, and I fell in love with him. And I listened to him very carefully, and he directed me very simply into what I call just surrender. Surrender in this instant, the absolute power that I had been conditioned to give to my mind stream, to just recognize that there is a bigger power that is the intelligence that actually gives rise to the thoughts, the mind stream. And that was the beginning of really turning my life upside down, or I should say right side up.
That must have been a big beginning. That must have been huge.
It was
huge.
A big beginning.
Yeah.
Because I actually
and
thought
you know
I was
what?
Advanced.
That's the best part, I tell you. You know, I'll tell you this, and it's something that I'm investigating a little bit, Gangaji, is that I've heard, like, Ram Dass shares a similar story. So many saints and sages, when they met their master, something happened, something shifted, something awakened in us. And for some people, it's Jesus. For some, it's Buddha. For some people, it's the grandmother next door. And I'm always quite curious to try to identify what is that energy that connects to that other person, especially if it's a very elevated teacher. And that, like, wakes you up. It wakes you up, and you know you can't see the world with the same eyes you used to see it with before that meeting occurred. Did you ever investigate that and wonder about that mystery?
Well, I was so struck by it. The minute I met Papaji, he opened the door. We were knocking on his door, and he said, "Welcome, come in." And he was a tall man, and he was beautiful. He was 80 years old then, but just beautiful, radiant being. And I saw when he said welcome that it was not just a greeting. It was a true welcome. There was just this enormous force coming from him that was inviting. It wasn't threatening. And I had heard of him as a teacher, so I was prepared to see him as a teacher. But I wasn't prepared for the heart opening that just immediately happened. It was love at first sight, I would say. And I know a lot of people that happened to with him, and I think it's a mystery, finally, just like all love is. How do you fall in love with anyone? Sometimes they don't fit your needs at all. In this case, it was a perfect fit because I needed to hear what he said so directly to me. So I don't know that I could have heard him in the same degree if I hadn't experienced that heart opening, that I loved him immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And there's a lot sitting in us, and when it opens up, what do we do with it, right?
Yes,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well.
So let's talk about the role of self-inquiry in unraveling our suffering and discovering true freedom. I mean, there are some of us who sense something's not right, but we're not always honest or courageous enough, or maybe it's just not the time for us to begin to address that issue. And so we're not living a life of freedom. Yes, it looks like we're free, especially in this country, but at a deep spiritual level, we're chained. We're chained by past memories, broken hearts, unfulfilled expectations. We're chained by, a lot of illusion. So share with us the role of self-inquiry, because that's really important for you, I know.
Yes, that's the essence of really what Papaji and his guru, Ramana Maharshi, spoke of, which is, when Ramana spoke of it, he said, ask yourself, who am I? But I found in today's times that that's been overused, and like a lot of our words that we use that in essence are absolutely the truth, the words become corrupted or polluted with our idealizations or our conceptions. So for me, what self-inquiry is really taking an opportunity in a second, or giving yourself 12 seconds to recognize that you are suffering in a particular moment. There's pain, and with that pain, there's some narrative. There's some, why is this happening to me, or what did I do wrong, or whose fault is it, whatever the narrative may be. And in self-inquiry, you take 12 seconds to stop the narrative, to withdraw your attention from the narrative, and to put your attention directly on what you are experiencing underneath the narrative, which initially could be pain or anger or despair, but to allow that to be the vehicle of inquiry, so that you put your attention on your anger, your fear, your despair, maybe it's even bliss, whatever you're experiencing. There's no right thing to be experiencing, and you open to it without your narrative. So we are so conditioned to this power of mind, which is a beautiful power, and I fully support thinking and creative thinking and the mysteries of our conceptual minds, but we overlook the deeper power, the pure intelligence, which is your own self, consciousness, Satchitananda, in our following of the narrative. And what I have found is that we have pain. Pain is a part of the experience of life, but the suffering is the pain plus some narrative. It can be a subconscious narrative, or it can be a practiced narrative. But if we're willing just to, for a moment, a few seconds, stop the narrative, open to what is here. So opening and willingness are really the keystones of self-inquiry. Then we discover, well, what is free? We don't become free, but we discover that freedom is here and peace is here.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of what the more surface experiences are, in spite of our fears and our anguish, and including our fears and our anguish.
Right. Now, sometimes the pain and the suffering is so deep that, I don't know, it serves some kind of an energy in the personality of the person. And is there a tool that you have come across that can help individuals to go deeper, to get rid of that subconscious pain? You know, their deepest, purest self knows it's not good for the self in the bigger picture, but it can't let go of that energy. Is there a technique that you can offer our listeners that can help somebody who might be stuck in an old pattern of thinking that's actually damaging their health, their mind, their relationships?
Well, the strongest help is the willingness to tell the truth. So even everything you just said, you know, if someone can simply tell the truth about that, then we can see in a moment that we are quite attached to our narratives, that they have defined us in some way, and that we're even attached to our suffering as the depth of our emotions. And I know in my own case, I was quite attached to my suffering. It did define me as a deep person, that I could feel things so emotionally. But when I told a deeper truth, that was a kind of self-torture. It was a kind of masochistic action. And that actually it was very simple in that moment of truth-telling to just stop, that narrative, that I didn't have to keep whipping myself. Now, I understand, and it was my experience also, that the narrative can be quite subtle, but the suffering is not subtle. The self-torture, which maybe is a form of self-hatred often, it's certainly self-punishment, is not subtle. And so we can start with that and overhear ourselves, overhear what we are saying to support the suffering or to support the patterns of suffering, and be willing to recognize that as a kind of false god that we have prayed to release me or see me, and to withdraw the energy. So that's really, when I speak to people, it's really on a one-to-one basis, even though it may be in a large group of people, because
I love that
our
format.
Suffering, our suffering is universal. I mean, there are certain universal patterns, but it's also very particular.
Yes.
That's why it takes the person's willingness to tell the truth about what they're getting or how they're getting
part,
off
Gangaji.
Of their suffering.
Gangaji, that's sometimes the hardest. It's as if something wired in our souls will not allow us to be aware for the change to happen, as if it's almost like a debt the soul has to pay off. I think the big part is, how do I allow myself to get affected by that? If I do, for example, with what we're going through in America, am I affected by what seems to be something as a vibration that doesn't feel genuine? And does that become my suffering, or do I just go, look, this is what happens when light is about to come on, take all over America, and so the dark is fighting? I could use all the beautiful words possible. But my big question to you is it really possible to experience wholeness in the midst of strong emotions like sadness, fear, anger, disappointment?
Absolutely, it is. Because none of those emotions is separate from wholeness. So in the willingness to directly experience the pure emotion of sadness or grief or loss or however it's being framed in your subconscious or your conscious mind, to purely experience that with no story in that moment about the past or the future, just opening to that experience, then you discover that hate is not separate from love. And brokenness is not separate from wholeness, but it's a discovery. It's a direct discovery. It's then not a dogma or even an affirmation. It's a direct discovery, and that's why I say it is self-inquiry, that you have found yourself in the midst of whatever you are experiencing, because you are always here. The wholeness is always here. And we are going through hard times in the whole world, and I think that pain is natural, and empathy is certainly natural, but there's a way that we unnecessarily and unnaturally take the pain that is happening or in our empathizing and incorporate that into our self-torture, and then we are contributing to the pain. We are not actually being willing to be open to the pain so that we can be the proof of the source of life, that this love is always here, whatever the circumstances.
Beautiful. Well said. I really, yes, it did. I appreciate it. I think the biggest part for many of us that we struggle with moving forward is just to be open, to be honest, to take the necessary step to actually change that pattern of thinking. You have actually, like you shared, you know, we can end the stories of suffering and we can awaken. But let's talk about relationships and how can relationships actually help us or maybe even hinder us in deepening our self-recognition, because sometimes we get so caught up in people that we forget ourselves.
Oh, yes. Yes, well, you know, I believe that just goes back to our early survival strategies. Mm-hmm. We needed to be caught up in people, and it was to our best interest to be caught up in people. And also, we love to be caught up in people. Whether they're imaginary people in some book we're reading or real people that we're living with, we are limbically connected to each other and to all life forms. So that's why there is some degree of pain in that always, because usually, maybe always, we also have a narrative about these other people that may be competing or may be supportive of our own suffering. So the delicacy in actually being in relationship and being willing to experience the trials of relationship that are natural, without the willingness to torture yourself for your mistakes, to be willing to see mistakes, to correct mistakes, or to see mistakes in others and to ask for correction in others, without the self-torture, because that's what I call unnecessary suffering, and that's what we add to the complexity of life. That's unnecessary, where we don't have to suffer like we suffer. We can suffer purely and cleanly and immediately, and we can tell the truth, and we can make changes, and we can surrender to the changes that won't be made. But we don't have to add this element of personal suffering. And we somehow
Let me step in here that we don't have to add the element of personal suffering, but that's what's going on. I mean, we tend to respond so much from our pained self, you know, what we call in the Brahma Kumaris, our karmic accounts, you know, debts that are still owed, you know, either to ourselves or to people. We still do come from that pained self. There is something that's just become so natural for us to be in that space. Does the role of God play a part here, or is it more just the importance of self-inquiry?
Well, the word God, you know, is a big word, and it's so often, it means so many different things that I don't usually use the word God. But for our purposes, for our conversation, I would say that the God is this love that is really quite capable of taking care of all of our karmic debts, that in the willingness to meet the suffering, as it may be, however it may be presenting itself, fear, despair, just the normal suffering, just to open to that, you are in fact opening to God, not an idea of God, which is a narrative, but to the presence of the omnipresent Godness that is life itself. That's what I use the phrase Satchitananda a lot, because to me that is the summation of what God is. It's consciousness aware of itself as being, as life, and then naturally inseparable from that awareness, overflowing in love, joy. So when I asked Papaji something about karmic debts once, because I really felt a very strong karmic relationship with someone, and it was a suffering, and I didn't know if it was my debt or the other person's debt, but I was caught in the web of it. And he said, in the moment of inquiry, in the moment of being still, there's no debtor and there's no debt. There's just a spaciousness. That's what God means to me.
I love that. That was a beautiful moment. Thank you, Gangaji.
Because it really is true.
It is true. It is true. I feel like I want to keep talking with you, and rather to be on the clock just pains me. I hope that's not a bad thing. But recently, you might have heard one of our friends in the community, and I call anybody who is sort of awakening and helping to bring positivity and goodness to the planet at a inner, outer level awakened. And Marianne Williamson is now running for president in 2020. And Marianne is the author of Return to Love and has authored a lot more other bestsellers, items or books throughout time. She's been on the journey for almost 30 years. Quite a lot of individuals, especially folks in the conscious community, know of her. So when she got the call to run and put her hat in the ring, with the millions of followers that she had, we just thought it was like a no-brainer, and I'm in support of many of the candidates. I'm more curious about the voice that she brings in, so it's not an endorsement, but it's more so one of us with the courage to get on a political platform to bring consciousness and politics to America is huge for me. So here she is, right? Millions of followers. She's got at least 10 times more than maybe you and I have. And with that, many of her followers don't accept that she should be doing what she's doing. Now, in order for her to get into the DNC debates, which means that she's up there with the Bidens and the Kamala Harris and the Cory Bookers, because they've got their unique donors, which is 65,000 or more, to get onto the real platform, because it means they need to know who's a real serious contender. Mm-hmm. What I've been hearing is that a lot of people, Gangaji, separate their spiritual life from their life in the outside world. And so I found it really, really disturbing that her own base wouldn't support her because they don't think she should be in the ring. And in my view, I go, it's not about that. The fact, don't you love what this person has offered your own life? Don't you think this would be good for her to offer it to more Americans in the country? And I find that they were just separating the spirituality with the task. Like, couldn't she be spiritual while she was in action? What are your thoughts about that? Why are we separating spirituality with our physical, everyday, to-day life? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it's a kind of madness, it sounds, seems to me, that separation is artificial, clearly. I mean, our political, our physical, our mental, our emotional lives are here, so we actually can't get away from them. And then to try to make the spiritual is something different from that is, I mean, I did do that at one time in my life. I was an activist, and I was participating in nonviolent trainings and doing protests in California in the late 70s, and I recognized
we all were
in that part of the anti-nuclear power plant work, and just suggesting that maybe we shouldn't put nuclear power plants on fault lines in California. But anyway, we did lose, and we ended up going to jail for a period of time. But I found in these groups that we were very superior We felt superior to PG&E, the utility company, who was fighting us. We felt superior, certainly, to people who were saying love everyone. We felt superior, and I had to get out of it because of that sense of superiority. And I started identifying myself more as a spiritual seeker, and that's when I got involved with Tibetan Buddhism. And, of course, I found the same sense of superiority in these circles. It's like, well, we're better because we aren't protesting, we aren't involved in the world. And that's when I realized that this identity of who you are as a spiritual person, as a political person, the identity itself is imposed. That's a narrative that you're telling yourself. And if you're willing to look under that identity, that narrative, you find what is universal. Of course, we have roles that we play that are spiritual or political or a mix of both, but that's not our identity. And I really agree with you. I was quite excited. I've only seen a YouTube of Marianne Williamson, but I thought it was brilliant and alive and electric, and I thought, good for her. She has the energy for something like that, and why not? So I'm actually surprised to hear that her supporters, many of her supporters, don't support that, because I would think they would be attracted to that kind of dynamic, take charge.
Me too. And I would love for us to keep, you know, sending the message out there, you know, just to let everybody know. She only needs about, I think, maybe 10 more thousand or 15 more thousand. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is it shouldn't be creeping like that. It shouldn't be creeping since February that she's put her hat in the ring, you know. It just should be, yeah, let's go. Let's hear what she has to say.
Yeah.
So, folks, don't you know, if you're tuning in to America Meditating, I'm having a heart-to-heart conversation with the amazing Gangaji. I can call her an author, a guru, a teacher, a woman, a mother, this. She's just good spirit. She's got good energy. Her heart's in the right place. And I hope that you'll be able to replay the podcast and really begin to go over some of the thoughts and the ideas that both of us have had within the last 30 minutes. Before we come to a close, I would love to find out, how is Gangaji doing right now in her journey? Here it's been a few decades from those days when we all thought we were God, and then recognize that, oh my God, I've got too many defects to be that. And then you start to realize, well, maybe I can be, you know, his kid or his cousin. You know, here you are decades later. What is the purpose of a life of spirituality for you?
Well, I would have to say that, you know, all life either is about inclusion or exclusion. And a life of suffering is about exclusion. A life of inclusion is a willingness to experience pain and to be humbled and to see delusion or to see inflation as well as deflation. So I think that my biggest teacher was my teacher, Papaji, but his teaching, I mean, they name it non-duality, but that is inclusion, that all are welcome and all are here already. And actually, God is all. Freedom is all. I'm very happy to be included and to include.
It's so beautiful to hear. Any events, any upcoming programs for you?
Well, I'm having a retreat this weekend. That's what's forward in my mind right now, which is I go into prisons and work with prisoners. I don't personally go anymore, but I have a correspondence program and a course program in prisons. And we're having a retreat this weekend, a one-day retreat. It's called Freedom Inside, because that's the title of our course that we present to prisoners.
That's beautiful.
I used to, but my website has the information. I never know exactly what my schedule is.
I get it. And what's your website?
It's GANGAJI.org.
Gangaji. Can I tell you thank you with all my heart for joining us today and for continuing to spread your light and being so genuine and authentic as well. And would love to meet with you when you're in the nation's capital. I think it'll be nice for us to get together for chai.
Thank you. What an honor. I really feel honored to be included. Thank you.
Take good care. Many blessings to you.
Blessings to you.
So that was the amazing Ganga Ji. She's got a simple message for us. It's time for us to shift our allegiance from activities of the mind to an internal presence of being. If you'd like some more information, just go to Ganga Ji, GANGAJI.org. Remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission, and we really are here to love each other the same. So we definitely do have to start with that. And if you happen to be in the nation's capital, come and see us at the Meditation Museum. We'd love to spend some time with you. Take care, everyone. Here's Sanatan Kaur, Ek Omkar.
I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes, 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.